On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we talk about the Washington Nationals clearing house. Not the White House, the front office house. Mike Rizzo and Davey Martinez, manager and general manager, out the door. We talk about the all-star rosters, which were revealed on Sunday, and fly through all the results from the weekend, including five sweeps. Hello, and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that can't believe the Washington Nationals fired the Rizzler. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman and canning a 10-year-old? I mean, that seems uncalled for.
That seems like terrible karma in the year 2025. What are the Nationals thinking? We have a lot to talk about on this Monday morning. Oh my goodness, so much news. We got all-star rosters. We got six sweeps to get into. But Jake, you teased it. No, not the Rizzler. Mike Rizzo and Davey Martinez are no longer atop the Washington Nationals organization. And that is today's opener.
A chaotic morning in Washington, D.C. that doesn't make me feel depressed. Feels nice, doesn't it? The Washington Nationals, after quite a long while, have canned Mike Rizzo, their general manager, and Davey Martinez, their skipper. Rizzo has been with the organization, had been with the organization since 2006. He's been the GM since August of 2009. Davey Martinez was hired before the 2018 season. This can only be described as a paradigm shift in the history of this franchise. Even if they don't make drastic changes, it is still a monumental day in the city of monuments.
Yeah, and you know, for us, we having grown up in the DC area, kind of around the Nats show up for us when we're 10, and you know, neither of us are Nats fans, but kind of watching this organization grow from this team that just showed up, you know, from Montreal and was very, very, very bad and playing in this very terrible stadium, to then building this nice stadium and building and then assembling these generational talents that they kind of lucked into timing wise with Bryce Harper and Steven Strasburg. I bring all that up to say that like Mike Rizzo's kind of been there for the whole thing, and we don't really know the Nationals without Mike Rizzo being the face of it. And of course, more recently, Davey Martinez. Now, Davey Martinez was hired before the 2018 season. He was tied for the fifth longest tenured manager with Aaron Boone. So Davey Martinez, maybe not as much of, you know, the face of the Nationals, but also in some ways he is, because he was the guy that was the manager when they win the World Series. And that championship has loomed over this franchise for better or for worse ever since it happened. And now that we've had some pretty big picture conversations about the Nationals this year as they've struggled to find their way out of the rebuild despite some huge individual success stories.
Yeah.
But it does seem like, and we can talk about the timing here, apparently, somehow we got to the point where the learners were like, okay, hold on a second. Something does need to change right now, even with the trade deadline coming up and with the draft coming up with the Nationals having the number one pick.
You mentioned the learners by one name, like their Prince or Cher. That's because we grew up here and the learners have been characters. For people who are not familiar with the inner workings of the Washington Nationals ownership group, I think that's important context. So would you like to go ahead and provide some of that?
Yeah. So, I mean, this family has owned the Nationals for, I think, since they got here, right? I think they've been now
so
previously.
Since 2006, yep. Because the team was owned by the league, right. which moved it from Montreal. The league hired Jim Bowden, who was the first general manager of this team. Bowden was then fired in 2009 after a huge international signing bonus scandal that people just kind of forget about, but don't think too hard about it. And the learners buy the team, acquire the team, whatever, in 2006. Rizzo gets promoted into the GM role in 2009, And so because of that, the learners have never made this type of hire before. And I think that's important context. Throughout the decade, as the team kind of hops into contention behind Harper and Strasburg and Rendon and Turner and this core that eventually brings the championship of 2019, the learners are spending real money on the team. They're investing. They're giving Jason Wirth that massive contract. And I think they deserve some credit for doing so. That all culminates in this moment in 2019 where they finally win. And then what happens? The pandemic. I don't know if you remember that, but it was
I did notice
a crap show.
That did cross now, my radar. Yeah.
There were bigger effects of the pandemic than a baseball team running out of money. However, it is an important point in this story because you make your money off the World Series the following year, whether that's ticket sales, whether that's sponsorship dollars, whether that's concessions, merchandise, it all works on a bit of a tape delay. The Nationals never got the windfall from that tape delay because they win in 19, pandemic happens in 20, and when they emerge from 2020 and 2021, the team's bad, right? The core guys from 19 are either hurt, they're old, some of them get traded that year, Juan Soto moves the next year, and so you kind of understand a little bit why the learners have pulled back from a financial perspective. The other dynamic here, right, is that Ted Lerner, who was kind of the head honcho Logan Roy type character atop the whole thing, he doesn't seem to be that horrible of a human being. He passed away, I believe, in 2022 or 2023. He was kind of the self-made patriarch of the family who cared the most about the Nationals. When he dies, control then goes to Mark Lerner, who had kind of been involved for a number of years before his father's death. And Mark, for what I would describe his reign as slightly more disorganized. And there's less consensus within the family about how they want to go from here. There were rumors that they were going to sell the team. They put it on the market. They pulled it off the market. And here we are today on July 7th. Where Mark Lerner makes the decision to can Davey Martinez and Mike Rizzo and push the team in a new direction.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as Ted's health was declining, Ted Lerner passed away February of 2023. Mark had started to be in charge, but again, like the organization was already heading in a very different direction pretty shortly after that World Series. And, you know, you use the word disorganized, I think just like disconnected, unclear. They've just kind of been floating for these past few years. Now, as we know, that Juan Soto trade does give them, as painful as it was at the time, it does provide an epic infusion of talent that Mike Rizzo and Co. seem to have absolutely crushed, that in theory they would be able to build around for this next generation of Nationals baseball. Unfortunately, even though multiple of those players are all-stars, the team still stinks. And I think that has become very clear this season that they are not trending in the right direction fast enough. And maybe Mark Lerner was not as go and not willing to spend nearly as much as his dad. And maybe there were limitations that, you know, the front office was working under this past year that restricted them from really pushing into more of a contention window. At the same time, to be this bad still after this many years, when you have invested some in bringing in some veteran players around these young guys, I think it got to the point where it was no longer worth it. Now, again, the timing here is interesting because it is easy to be like, well, wait a minute, about to have the trade deadline. You're probably going to be sellers.
Well, let me hop in, actually. That much to move. I want to hop in.
And then they have the draft.
Let me hop in. Yeah. I want to hop in here. We'll talk about the timing in a second. But you talk about they really haven't brought in veterans to supplement this core. Like, they haven't made significant financial investments. They haven't. Right, they've traded for Nathaniel Lowe and they like sign Ahmed Rosario, but that falls short of what I think the fan base wants. But I think what I would counter with is, do you trust Mike Rizzo to make those assessments correctly in this day and age of baseball? I don't think so, right?
Yeah.
So now we're in I think that that's important to remember. Let's hop into the timing. Okay.
Yeah. So now the first things first, like who's managing, who's general managing? Do you want to give some background on that? We only have one of those answers as we're recording this on Monday morning.
Mike DiBartolo, Not DiBartolo as in Cologne. I checked this. I believe it is DiBartolo. That feels important. He is now the general manager on an interim basis. He has been with the Nationals for the last 12 years in their front office. Started as an intern, kind of crawling up the ranks. Now he's in charge. People that I've spoken with, he seems like a qualified individual to run a Major League Baseball team. He has a more analytical type bent than Rizzo. That is for sure. Rizzo is considered very old school. He is in charge. He will oversee the draft. He will oversee the deadline. And I think will be a real candidate for the full-time job come this winter if the Learners decide to embark upon a search. Right now, the bigger issue is that there is no manager. One was not announced yesterday with a statement. If we had to guess, we think it'll be bench coach Miguel Cairo or AAA manager Matthew Lecroy, who had been there for a long, who has been in the organization forever. And I actually think that the coaching and player development side of this is more important in a way, because that is where the Nationals have fallen woefully short. We had a kerfuffle earlier this year where Davey Martinez was asked about the coaching staff and whether they needed to do a better job. And he said, it's never on the coaches. That led to a lot of backlash. I believe Andrew Golden of the Washington Post reported that Nats players were pissed, understandably, about that. You know, I have gathered that there have been moments where the Nationals will like tell new players, hey, you need to listen to this coach, but not this coach and that coach, right? That is never a good thing. And so how the Nats decide to overhaul their coaching staff at the big league level in the next 24 hours, I think will tell us a lot about the direction that the Learners and DiBartolo plan to go in.
Yeah, I'd push back a little bit. I think when you are making sweeping changes midseason, putting too much pressure on them, nailing who the coaching staff should be, I think it's a little dramatic to say that will tell us everything. But it could be an indicator. And, you know, they're off today. They go to St. Louis and Milwaukee for a little road trip before the All-Star break. So, you know, am I going to think about them any differently if they hire Lecroy or if they hire whatever. They bring in Cairo or he's already been the bench coach. Like, I don't know. But I do think the coaching staff
is a really important thing
to watch after this season.
I'll think about them differently.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair. If they bring in Tony La Russa, I agree. That would be a concerning decision. But I do think that, yeah, the timing with the draft is interesting just because, you know, as we're trying to figure out who's going number one, this is not a year where the last few times the Nationals had the number one pick, it was like, yeah, take that guy. It's not that hard. There's a lot of options. There's a lot of different directions you could go. How much Rizzo was going to have the pull to make the pick based on how the Nationals drafted last year was kind of a different strategy. They brought in some different voices in the amateur scouting room over the past couple of years. So that has kind of changed their process. But again, we've always kind of assumed that Rizzo is still the one calling the shots. And the other thing you have to recognize is that since Strasburg and Harper fell in their lap, the Nationals have been basically the worst team in baseball at drafting. Now, development is a big part of that, and you can blame that too, and maybe they were drafting good players and none of them turned out to be good because all their coaches sucked. But that's a huge sample of drafts where they have just not produced good major leaguers. It's over a decade where they are just not producing good players. And so maybe if you know that and you're the Learners, you're like, hold on, we're about to have the number one pick. Like, not just that pick, but just another draft where we're trying to get better a lot faster.
Yeah.
Maybe he shouldn't be calling the shots anymore. And we will make that decision, you know, a week before. So
that's why I don't have a huge issue with the timing. I think the Learners, the ownership group, they are generally very passive. And I think needed a cataclysmic weekend to convince them to make these types of sweeping changes. The Nationals got boat raced over the weekend by the Red Sox in embarrassing fashion. I think that you don't want Rizzo in charge of the draft and in charge of the deadline. Yes, I know he nailed the Soto trade. Great. Yes, I know the Nats don't really have a whole lot to trade away, right? Still, the track record here is bad enough that it's understandable that you're like, you know what? Are we a little close to these two big, you know, points of the season? Yeah, sure. It's way better, in my opinion, than letting him do them, letting him oversee the draft and potentially biffing it up, letting him oversee the deadline and not trading away rentals or getting back the wrong types of prospects or whatever, right? Now, maybe it should have happened a month ago. I'm willing to have that conversation, okay? But I think this is way better than waiting a month.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm very excited to see. I mean, we were already curious what direction the Nationals were going to go. I don't know if we'll really ever be able to tell whether who they take is different than who Mike Rizzo would have taken. I don't know. Put Mike Rizzo on the draft broadcast. MLB Network, ESPN. Come on. That would be great television. I know, you know, ESPN's bringing in all these fired NBA coaches for their playoff coverage. Why not put Rizzo on the draft broadcast? I'd love that. It'd be hilarious.
Mike, theoretically, say, if you had the first pick in this draft, for example, who might you think about taking? Like, who do you like here?
I know this is like hard Kate to Anderson. Like. Yeah, it's like hard to imagine if you were like in this situation. Like, just imagine. Last thing on the
theoretically,
Nats, and then we'll give the Red Sox some love before we move on to the All-Stars. Mike Rizzo, of course, reached out, the Washington Post reaching out to him, saying, "Hey, Mike Rizzo, what happened? Did you get fired?" Mike Rizzo's like, "Yes." Quote, this is what he wrote in a text to Barry's Verlugo of the Washington Post. Quote, "The sun will come up tomorrow. That's the job. I had a great run. Navigated that ownership group for almost 20 years. Yikes. That's a bit of a swipe on the way out the door. The people that employed you for the last two decades are like, that ownership group, those people, I dealt with them and I won a World Series and traded for James Wood. Don't you forget it, folks."
They let Mike Rizzo have that job longer than he should have had that job. I would argue in part that that ownership group navigated Mike Rizzo over the last 20 years. But the funniest part about this is his assertion that the sun would come up tomorrow. I am currently in the DMV.
Yeah.
And I can report, boots on the ground, it's raining this morning. The sun did not come up today.
That's a bad
here
sign.
In DC.
I'm sorry, Riz. Hey, last thing on this. You know, I don't know, man. They're 2.5 back of the Braves. James Wood looks like one of the best players in baseball. Like, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
If I had told you that the Nats were 2.5 back of the Braves on July 7th and James Wood would look like a top 10 player in baseball, what are we firing Mike Rizzo for? Things must be going great.
Mackenzie Gore going to the All-Star game. CJ Abrams in awesome first half.
Yeah, filling vibes are good.
Filling in the gaps on the roster is why Rizzo needed to go. Okay? Because we were talking about this before. Like, it's not as simple as acquire as many good baseball players as you can. You have to have these processes set up within a modern organization in order to have success. That is where, when you look at teams like the Brewers or the Rays, and it's like, how do they keep getting away with this? All these random no-names just show up and are two-win players. It's like, those guys didn't just, as it seems like it is true to us, they didn't just show up they didn't spawn in spring training. Like, they are acquired and developed and nurtured through processes in the organization. And the Nats, over the last 5 years, have just not done that. They got like two hot months. What was the Mexican first baseman's name?
Jonathan Aranda, dude. What are you talking about? Joey Meneses.
Not the Rays, the Nats. Joey Meneses. They got two hot months of Joey Meneses. And like, I can't think of Kyle Finnegan, big win, I guess. But like, besides
Alex
that,
Call?
There's no Alex Call. Yeah. But maybe like the Nats don't do things out of nowhere, man.
Yep. All right. Quickly, before we take a break, the Nationals got swept. Red Sox, Luke Giolito back in Nationals Park. The organization that drafted and did not develop him, clearly.
Certainly not.
He goes 7-2/3 on Friday. Trevor Story has a huge weekend. Red Sox went 11-2. Mitchell Parker just gets demolished on Saturday. There were some errors in there. Rafaela hits his 13th home run. Buehler was like kind of okay, which by his standards recently is like kind of encouraging. Red Sox win 10-3 on Saturday. And then Garrett Crochet against poor Shinosuke Ogasawara, who was making his major league debut. Hey, he's a big leaguer. He'll always be able to say that. I don't know how many more starts he's going to get in the big leagues, but this one didn't go especially well. Garrett Crochet was pretty good, and Story Rafaela homer again. Red Sox win 6-4. They are back over 500. Look at the Red Sox go.
For now.
Still two and a half back, I believe, of the AL wild card.
The Ogasawara and Rizzo eras overlapping for one single beautiful day in the nation's capital. Can you imagine? He's sitting there. Yeah. He literally just got there, like day one in the big leagues. And they're like, hey, fire the manager and the general manager. He's like, this happened all the time? Is this normal?
Yeah, is this normal? Red Sox, way to take care of business. Still a lot of work to do. We're going to take a break. When we return, it's time to talk about the All-Star team.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. We got the All-Star rosters yesterday. Mike Rizzo did not make it, but many other players did. Let's go around the league and talk about it. All right, what are some of the notable ones that stand out? Jordan, we're not going to fly through the entire list. Pick out a few that are interesting to you.
Yeah, believe it or not, we are going to first focus on the guys who did make the team. Listen, to me, it's always about the first timers. It's about the guys who were either, you know, the first timers on the teams that aren't very good, like Shane Smith, who becomes the first player since Dan Uggla to make the All-Star team as a rookie Rule 5 pick. That is absolutely
That's
amazing.
Good.
And truly, yes, that is good and Uggla is what that is. So congratulations to Shane Smith. I know he didn't pitch well yesterday, but that was awesome. Seeing guys like Matthew Boyd make it, he was like, again, this, you know, crowded pitcher options, but for him to make it and then pitch so well on Sunday night was really cool. He's one of our favorite human beings in the game and well deserving for how well he has pitched for the Cubs this season, especially amongst those injuries. Hunter Goodman is another one who's like totally deserving. And it's also cool, you know, what was compelling to me, and this is sort of getting to, you know, the snub conversation. I think an important part of this, we've talked about how the fan voting for the starters has become kind of convoluted. What is appreciated is that the actual process of voting the alternatives has become more clear. They have been a lot more transparent about how this process works. And I think it's important that we kind of talk about how this process works, because not only do I understand it better, now they are just being very explicit in communicating how they are selected. So before we get to any other names, like, let's just remind people how this goes about, because it is very relevant as to how players end up on these teams.
So the starters are selected by you, the people of America, and I guess the world. Are there any countries where you can't vote? Like, are there like restrictions in Albania in regards to All-Star voting? If you're in Albania, couldn't vote.
If there are restrictions, I don't think it's like, you know, the whatever the Albanian government is not like, you can't vote on MLB All-Stars. Actually, maybe it is. That's probably more likely than MLB being like, we don't want Albanians voting for our teams. So I don't know.
Yeah. Let us know. Question. If you're in Tirana, you know, hit us up. baseballbarbacast@gmail.com.
I think anyone can vote anywhere. Anyway, continue.
Got it. The fans vote on the starters. And then the players vote on the reserves, on some of the reserves. And it is indicated which All-Stars are player votes and which All-Stars are league selections. Now, the league selections exist in order to get players that don't get in by player voting, or to ensure that every team has at least one representative. There were six MLB choices in each league. Players where, you know, Commissioner Manfred and co. were like, hey, you, go to Atlanta. You're in. Okay, seven if you include Kershaw. We'll get to that. In the AL, that is Chris Bubich, Brian Wu, Bobby Witt Jr., Jazz Chisholm Jr., Yusei Kikuchi, and Shane Smith. I think Bubich and Wu, pretty straightforward, just really good pitchers on teams that would have had another or multiple All-Stars. Anyway, Bobby Witt Jr., he lost in the player voting, and at first I was like, that's nuts. And then I realized he lost to Jeremy Peña, who's really good, and I was like, that's fine. So they want to have Bobby Witt Jr. there. Totally makes sense. Jazz is really interesting. He's been awesome. Like, he's got like a 970 OPS since he got off the IL in the beginning of June. He's playing out of position and deserves some credit for that. Is he going to do the Derby? That would be sweet. Kikuchi and Smith are the, you're the only guy on that team. You have, we need to have an Angel. We need to have a White Sox. Get your ass to Atlanta. In the NL, it is Matt Olson, Kyle Stowers, Robbie Ray, Freddie Peralta, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, and Matthew Boyd are the commissioner selections. Stowers and Peralta are the only Marlin and the only Brewer. Yamamoto absolutely had to be there considering how awesome he's been. And then Olson, I would imagine, was picked because he's the hometown guy. That makes sense. Ray and Boyd is kind of like a, hey, you made it through the ringer of being a veteran left-handed pitcher with tons of injuries. You deserve this moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little different, right? Like, Robbie Ray has won a Cy Young before, but hasn't made the All-Star team since 2017, which is kind of amazing. He was not an All-Star the year that he won the Cy Young in 2021. But yeah, I think those are fair assessments. I think the one other thing I would mention about the player voting, because that is kind of what helped determine the bulk of the other picks, it's still a little bit unclear how players are voted. Are they giving just a blank sheet of paper and are they voting? Do they get the same ballot that the fans get? Now, in the press release, they tell us how many player votes these players got. And so you can kind of see what the range is of players. So like Aaron Judge got the most votes of any player. Now, he didn't need them because the fans were voting him in too. He got 898 player votes. Now, I don't know what percentage that is. I don't know. Like, I'm not really sure what to compare that to, but it is kind of interesting to see which guys got real support. I mean, the fact that, you know, Jonathan Aranda got more player votes than Vlad Jr., according to this press release. So, like, that is compelling. That means that there are some players that made an impression, or somehow, for whatever reason, players were like, yes, I want to vote for that guy. And then that is also an important thing to understand when we're talking about some of the guys that made it that we maybe don't think deserve it, whether that's a Julio Rodriguez or that's a Fernando Tatis Jr., who haven't really been playing well recently. But you see on here, they must have gotten more player votes than some of these other outfielders. So that's how that was determined.
So I think you see this trend of guys who are awesome in April and May, who tail off in June getting in, and guys who have slower starts and are awesome in June not getting in, because players are coming to their conclusions kind of earlier on. I joke about this like all the time. Andrés Giménez, 2 homers on opening day, put him in the Hall of Fame. And you just remember these things from the early part of the season. That's why Juan Soto's not going. Right? Juan Soto was pretty mid for a month and a half and has been like the best hitter in the world for the next month and a half. And he doesn't get voted in because of that.
Yeah. But also, like, logistically, to your point, I don't know when they're voting. I think it's very possible that these players submitted their ballots 3 weeks ago. Like, I have no idea. Yeah. Like, that's the part that isn't totally clear. Now, getting caught up in that is probably not super worth it. That said, come on, it's snub season. People are absolutely furious at me. I have released my annual all-snub team, and I have snubbed even more guys. I have said, no, you don't belong either. And now people are more mad at me about Seiya Suzuki not making the team than they are at his fellow players or the league office who did not put him on the team. I don't know. I thought Michael Busch has been better than Seiya Suzuki. I also think that the timing was perfect, right? You have the teams come out, and then you have the Cubs absolutely destroy the Cardinals. Suzuki hits another homer, and like, it's just like, all the Cubs should be in the All-Star team. And it's like, you know what? Yeah, probably. Horner, sure. Awesome. Suzuki, yes. Bush, absolutely deserving. Like,
All these guys, of course, absolutely, no doubt. I have no problem with that.
Enjoy PCA and Matt Boyd more than you are frustrated for Seiya Suzuki.
Right. And by the way, I every still fan expect... base. Yes.
Yes.
Be happy for Clayton Kershaw, who gets to go, than you are frustrated that Andy Pahis gets to go on vacation, right? Yeah. Let's look for the joy. Some of these dudes are going to get in, especially pitchers. Because remember, the pitchers that pitch on Saturday and Sunday before the All-Star game will not pitch in the All-Star game and will necessitate replacements. We think that'll be like Scooble, Fried, DeGrom, Crochet. Like, there's a lot of spots there. There are three American League infielders who are, I think, going to not go or not play. They're on the IL. That's Brandon Lau, who was removed from a game yesterday. Jeremy Pena, who's on the IL, and Alex Bregman. So, like, Mikel Garcia and Addison Barger might end up going. So let's just like wait 3 days. Now, to be fair, there are some egregious ones this year, in my opinion, more than usual. I think the most egregious is Julio getting in over Randy. But it's important that when you're frustrated about this, my dear listeners, who to put your frustration towards, right? Julio getting in is not Commissioner Manfred sitting behind a laptop being like, I think he has beautiful eyes. This is the players voting for Julio, right? Which is, I guess, cool because he's cool. Yeah.
So what does that tell you? Is that, am I supposed to take from that that they still believe Julio is an all-star level player, even though his OPS starts with a six? Like, yeah, maybe. I mean, you can make that argument. You could still say that, yeah, Seidon Rafael is having a very similar season and he deserves it more. And let alone Randy, let alone Springer. I mean, again, there were a lot of misses here for sure. But to your point, more will get added. Last year we had 10 replacements, so there's going to be more guys, and we will be okay. But to your point, we got to be celebrating the ones that we know are going, because that's the whole point. That's the fun of it.
Yeah, like, you know, you and me, we're going. We're happier about us going than we are about our colleague Russ Dorsey not going, snubbed.
Right. And also, you know, the players, this is, by the way, this is the other hilarious dynamic for the All-Star game, which we always have to remember. This from Marty Caswell. Fernando Tatis said he had booked a hotel yesterday for a mini vacation before finding out today he was selected to the All-Star game. Fernando's like, oh, do I have to go? And by the way, to that point, I know it's like, guys, well, come on, appreciate that you are being an all-star. Like, how would you not want to go? It's like, listen, it's a long season. If you've done this whole all-star thing before, it is no surprise and honestly no shame for your players to be like, ooh, my back's feeling a little stiff. I know I've played 25 straight games leading into the break, so it seems ridiculous to say that I have an injury, but I think I'd rather take it easy instead of fly to Atlanta. And, you know, so that's going to happen too. That's going to happen too, and that's fine. Good. Then we'll get Seiya Suzuki in the game.
Needs to rest on this lounge chair on the beach with a Corona in my hand. And I think we're going to see a lot of that this year because, one, relatively unalluring destination. Atlanta outside in July is...
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me finish. That part, yes.
Atlanta outside in July, for the guys who start the second half on the West Coast and finish the first half on the West Coast, like the Dodgers and I believe the Giants, where it's like, you're out there, you got to fly across the country and then fly back, and then you only have like 2 days. I think we're going to see some
oof. Speaking of the Dodgers, I can think of someone who maybe could use a rest on his body, but is going to be going to the All-Star game because the commissioner wants him to. That's Clayton Kershaw, who has been remarkably durable so far this season, which is wonderful, coming off his multiple offseason surgeries. And shame on us, because we just had a conversation, a wonderful emailer saying, hey guys, remember when the commissioner had Miguel Cabrera and Albert Pujols as All-Stars and called them legacy picks or legend picks, and then they just didn't do that ever since, and we just like, are we ever going to see that again? And we speculated. We said, well, yeah, the problem right now is that none of these pitchers want to admit that their careers are ending, and so it would feel a little disrespectful to tell them like, hey, your career is ending, we're gonna honor you. But in this case, compared to Scherzer and Verlander, who are either injured or pitching poorly. Clayton Kershaw is pitching and pitching well, and we at least know that he is, you know, plausibly done soon.
So two thoughts.
And I don't think he would take disrespect. And so, but maybe you disagree. I mean, I imagine they have to have had, there's no way they did this without having some amount of sense that he would be interested. Because that, to me,
for sure.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm just making sure we're on the same
page. If he declines this now, oh, that's such a bad look, but so funny. I think there's a chance he like goes and doesn't pitch, right? Like that could totally happen.
For sure. I do not expect him to pitch at all.
Here's why it's Kershaw, not Verlander or Scherzer. Okay. Kershaw is significantly more reasonable and realistic about who he is right now in his life and in his career than those two other gentlemen. Okay. He understands his physical limitations and I think is more humble about them. Two, and the real reason he's going is he just got 3,000 strikeouts. And I think they want to honor that accomplishment and give that some shine on a big stage. And it feels like a good mechanism to do that.
Yes. Well, well, well said. So that'll be fun. And then the last bit of All-Star news that we just wanted to mention, then we have one other bit of news before we take a break, is Pete Alonso's not doing the Derby. This is a stunner, Jake Mintz. As we sit here on Monday morning, we still only have three participants officially in the Derby. I would not be shocked if by the time you're listening to this, we have a few more or one or two more. Because, again, we're running out of time here. We got to fill out this field. Pete's not doing it. We assumed he would do this in perpetuity. But instead, there will be an open spot. We now have James Wood and Cal Raleigh officially participating along with Ronald Acuña Jr. Which is shaping up to be, again, that's a hell of a start. So pretty excited there. But yeah, Pete saying like, yeah, just wasn't feeling it. What did he say? I wasn't calling to me, which is amazing.
I get it, man. Like, you got to have it in your soul. You got to be emotionally invested in the Home Run Derby. And I would rather have a new face than an uninterested version of Pete. If we don't have the version of Pete where he's like, taking deep breaths and like caring too much and like lifting beforehand, I don't want Pete in there at all. You know, I don't want a half-assed Pete Alonso in the Derby. So good for Pete for knowing himself and knowing his limits.
I think the best scenario for this, though, Pete is still an All-Star, deservingly so. I need at the Derby, basically like sitting there and just like judging people, like kind of just being like, you guys don't even understand what this event is about. You like, so every time James Wood like grounds one into the second to the imaginary second baseman, he's just gonna, Pete's just like, no, young man, that's not how it works. Or at some point, Pete, maybe they show him and he's like, he like has this itch, like, God, I regret not doing this. Like, I could do so much better than these losers.
He gets in the cage. So I know you don't watch a lot of soccer anymore, but legendary Manchester United manager Alex Ferguson goes to Manchester United games all the time. And just sits in the box and is just like watching as whatever incompetent gaffer is unable to get the Red Devils cooking in the right direction. He's just sitting there with this look on his face like, I could do this, but I don't want to.
Oh, my God. That is so funny.
Funny thing is if Pete, dude, so remember, there's no more extra innings in the All-Star game. If the All-Star game is tied, it goes to a home run derby to decide the winner. Pete Alonso doing that instead to win the All-Star game.
Oh, all right. God, wow. Yes. Okay. I'm going to let that sit. Now, like, Pete not doing the derby is just its own story, which I look forward to following. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, we still have plenty to talk about. We'll be right back on this whole podcast. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Before we recap the rest of the weekend action, we did want to, of course, address the other bit of news from the weekend. A terribly sad bit of news, which is that Bobby Jenks has passed away at the age of 44 from a very serious form of stomach cancer. This is a horribly sad story. Obviously, anyone, a player beloved like Bobby Jenks, passing away at such a young age is tough. But just reading about the last few years of his life and what he's kind of been through, Sam Blum wrote a truly heart-wrenching story at The Athletic about the last few years of Bobby Jenks' life, dealing with these medical issues, dealing with a lot of financial troubles. It was just a really, really difficult read, but also one that I think painted a picture of someone who was beloved, not only in Chicago, but really anybody that he touched. He was managing in the Independent League very recently before he really became quite ill. And all of the people that have kind of come out on social media talking about how great of a manager he was and how much of a impact he was still making on the game of baseball, even recently, you know, before he was really sick. And obviously his career was brief, but it was one of the more special, you know, as far as people who have careers of this length, this is about as much of an impact as you are really going to make on a city. Yeah. And of course, being a World Series champion that who's on the mound when the White Sox win in 05, that is not something that you will ever be able to take away from his legacy.
He threw triple digits, closed out the first game of the World Series, closed out the last game of the World Series. I think when you remember that White Sox team, he's on like the Mount Rushmore of key contributors. And, you know, we never got to interact with Bobby Jenks. I don't really, unfortunately, remember watching him pitch. But like you said, based upon the article Sam wrote, seems like a really interesting, unique guy. He was very open about some of the struggles he had with alcohol, with drugs. And our thoughts go out to his family, anybody who knows Bobby, anybody who played for Bobby, and the whole White Sox world.
Yeah. Yeah. And the last thing I'll just say about this is, right, like that White Sox team in particular, I know that was also breaking many, many years of not winning the World Series. But yeah, Bobby Jenks is just such a main character there. And even for me, not that I remember watching him pitch, but he was, because of that presence, like he was someone that I was very aware of as just like this reliever that I was supposed to know. Like right before it was really like Brian Wilson when the Giants were doing it in terms of just like closers with the big personality and just like the that reliever that is just like a main character. Bobby Jenks was absolutely that. And so it's a hell of a legacy, hell of a career. And yeah, rest in peace, Bobby Jenks. Thoughts to his family. And yeah, if you are a White Sox fan, that of course, I'm sure that World Series means a lot to you and you have Bobby Jenks stories, let us know, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. All right, Jake, we got a lot of baseball to recap and not that much time to do it. We got five sweeps. Let's get to how sweep it is.
Clean up, everybody.
There is no shame in getting swept. I never got swept. You guys got swept.
Let's begin in Los Angeles, where the Houston Astros strolled into Chavez Ravine and said, "Oops, did I sweep that?"
This was an impressive showing from the Houston Astros, who have, again, they've been the best team in baseball for basically the last 2 months. But this was a heck of a combination of performances. We get Lance McCullers is great on Friday, although that doesn't really matter because the Astros scored 18 runs. They hit five homers, two from Altuve. Oral Hershiser on the broadcast saying, "Oh man, it's like they know what's coming." Then he's like, "Yeah, it's because Kasperius is tipping," and everyone gets mad at Oral Hershiser. That also ages even worse because then the Astros continue to kick the Dodgers' ass. Over the next couple days, Shohei Ohtani on his 31st birthday looks great in his two innings. Everything after that, not so great for the Dodgers as Fromber was marvelous once again. Yainer Diaz hits a home run. Josh Hader is a perfect 25 for 25 save opportunities this year. They win 6-4 on Saturday. And then on Sunday, this is how you know the Astros are playing quite well. Ryan Gusto, Sugarland Skeeters legend. Sorry, Sugarland with Space Gusto. Cowboys. So what am I talking about? I'm wearing a Space Cowboys hat, and I still call them the Skeeters. I apologize. Ryan Gusto goes six innings. Dodgers, I mean, the number of people in Dodger Stadium are just like, who is this person doing this to us right now? And then, you know, Tanner Scott gives up two homers late, and the Astros win 5-1. Some tough news with the Dodgers. You know, Max Muncy, who was injured in that Clayton Kershaw 3,000 strikeout game, he's going to be out for a while, 6 weeks. Could have been worse, but not great. Emmett Sheehan's back in the rotation. He looked good, but again, the offense struggled this weekend. Christian Walker, who's, of course, having a tough season for the Astros, continues to dominate at Dodger Stadium with another home run there this weekend.
Dude, 9 homers and an 1864 OPS for Christian Walker over his last 8 games at Dodger Stadium. I want to have a longer conversation about the Astros at some point, because the way that they've been dominating, it is not Altuve and Yordan go boom. It is a bunch of new characters, a bunch of characters who, as long as Altuve is there, the stink of 2017 and the can banging trash stuff will linger. But we are far enough removed from it now that I hope casual fans are able to enjoy this Astros team without having that linger.
Yeah. Enjoy is probably a bit of a stretch, but definitely respect more than they did before. Let's go north of the border, where the Blue Jays completed a perfect homestand on Friday. Joe Adell, all-star snub, hits his 19th home run. That game goes to extras, and then Ernie Clement walks it off with a bunt and a Sam Bachman throwing error. Yikes, Angels. Blue Jays win 4-3 on that one. On Saturday, Max Scherzer pitches reasonably well. George Springer homers again. Lazaro Estrada, in his Major League debut, goes 4 innings in relief. And then another walk-off. Addison Barger, walk-off single, another all-star stub. Jays win their 7th in a row. On Sunday, Mike Trout homers his 14th. Kevin Gausman, pretty good otherwise. Bo Bichette homers late, and the Blue Jays hang on. Addison Barger snagging a 112-mile-an-hour line drive from Joe Adell for the final out. Blue Jays win 3-2. Everything's coming up Toronto right now. They, of course, just mopped the Yankees. They sweep the Angels. They have a perfect homestand. They got random guys coming up and immediately contributing, like Ryan Burr and Estrada and Joey Loperfito's back. And they are, what, 3 games up on the Yankees, I think? Two and a half games up on the Yankees. So the vibes are good in Toronto. 3 games.
Are you familiar with the term argy-bargy?
No.
So argy-bargy is a noun in British English that it basically means like a dispute or a disagreement, like an argument maybe. And I would like to start calling Addison Barger argy-bargy.
We'll see if we can get that to catch on. I am not particularly optimistic.
Merriam-Webster, examples of argy-bargy in a sentence. Wouldn't be a cricket match without a little argy-bargy over the umpires every call. Some of those British.
Oh, man. All right. Well, Pat, hey, Ben Nicholson-Smith, my dear friend, you are listening.
Maybe they use it up there.
To this pod. Yeah, I don't think so, but let us know how you think Addison Barger would respond to this nickname. Let's go to Cleveland, where things are bad. Vibes are horrendous for the Gardos as the Tigers sweep the Guardians. I was there for a few of these games. I was not there on Sunday when Tarek Skubal did the thing again. On Friday, it was a close one. Jose Ramirez homered early, but that was the end of the Guardians' offense for the evening. Wentzel and McKinstry homer late. Tyler Holton was very good. Tigers win 2-1. On Saturday, Casey Mize, 7 scoreless innings. Torque homers. Tigers win 1-0. That's the 9th straight loss for Cleveland. And then on Sunday, Stephen Kwan is doing his damn best. He was the only one doing anything against Tarek Skubal. But Skubal still goes 7 scoreless, 10 strikeouts. Gavin Williams was great. He pretty much matched him. Kwan hits a go-ahead double. Oh, my God, are they finally going to win? They're one out away, one strike away, maybe, in the 9th. And Clase throws a ball through Bo Naylor's legs. Was it Clase's fault? Was it Bo Naylor's fault? Probably Bo Naylor's fault. Anyway, that ties the game. They go to extras. Tigers score 6 runs in the top of the 10th. And the Guardians lose their 10th in a row. The Tigers are now 500 games ahead of the 13 and a half. Up on Minnesota atop the AL Central. Tarek Skubal is unbelievable, and Cleveland is very bad. And yes, Luis Ortiz is still under investigation. We do not have an update on that other than not going to be back anytime soon. So we don't have time to talk more about that now, other than when we have more updates, we will obviously cover it.
My gambling update is that I bet $30 on the Joey Chestnut under this weekend. And lost by one dog.
Sorry to hear that.
The first time I've gambled on sports in like a year, and I won't be doing it again anytime soon. I did not enjoy it. Quickly on Cleveland, they are such a mess, and I think this is relevant for the 29 other fan bases because they're going to definitely sell some things off the deadline. We'll talk about that more as the deadline approaches, but Cleveland has just plummeted into seller category. Meanwhile, I'm excited for the Tigers to have all these all-stars. Like, they are the best team in the American League, and they deserve to be framed as such. Let's go to Atlanta, where the Orioles swept the Atlanta Braves. The O's now have a better record than the Braves. Charlie Morton outdueled Spencer Strider in game one and his return to Truist Park. Westberg and Mullins homer in that game. O's win by one. Game two on Saturday. This one, Ramon Laureano and Jacob Stallings, both with big RBI doubles in the 10th inning. O's win 9-6. Game three on Sunday. Trevor Rogers, who deserves an apology from me and many others because he has been fabulous for the Orioles. 6 2/3 scoreless. Jackson Holliday 4-for-4 with a homer. O's win 2-1. They are cooking. They still are, I believe, 7 out in the AL wild card. They have a 6-game homestand before the break. I will be up there tomorrow to see them play the Mets, and then they finish up with the Marlins. Just keep chipping away. You win enough games, you're going to piss off Mike Elias because they're going to hop back into contention. I'm kidding. The other thing about the Orioles we should mention, their catching situation is just bananas. They have played 6 different catchers this year. And their current tandem is Jacob Stallings and Alex Jackson. They've also used Adley Rutschman, Gary Sanchez, Maverick Hanley, and Chadwick Tromp. This reminded me of the 2021 world champion Atlanta Braves, who I believe used 7 catchers that season, including Alex Jackson.
Oh, wow. I'm sure Alex Jackson is so proud to have been included on both of those teams. Yeah, I'll just say on Trevor Rogers before we move to our final sweep, he was like, uh-oh, Kyle Stowers is about to make the All-Star team. I better start pitching better. and he has been, which is good, but not an All-Star like Kyle Stowers. Last sweep of the weekend, the Mariners of Seattle welcome the Pirates of Pittsburgh, coming in on, I mean, one of the greatest weeks in franchise history for Pittsburgh, right? They absolutely pummeled the Mets last weekend. They shut out the Cardinals for a full week. Or for a full series, and then comes right back at them. Pirates fail to score over the entire weekend. Randy Arozarena hits a couple homers. Cal hits a couple homers. He has 35 home runs. Oh, my God. Cal has 35 home runs, guys. Cal Raleigh has home runs. 35 home runs. Brian Wu was great on Friday. He is a deserving all-star. They won 6-0. Luis Castillo, great on Saturday. George Kirby, great on Sunday. That is the recipe right there. Yeah, Skeens was awesome, but you know he wasn't getting the win. That's not how it works here in the year 2025. So very strange sequence for the Pirates. As for Seattle, this is a nice, impressive weekend. The problem is that they cannot gain ground. We got a great email from Garrett pointing out that the last time the Astros lost on a day where the Mariners won was June 8th. So even though the Mariners have kind of started to find some amount of momentum, they are just not making up any ground on Houston because Houston has been so good, but they are in decent shape in that third AL wild card spot. Those are the sweeps, those 6 sweeps, or those 5 we just talked about, plus the Red Sox, Jake. Let's get to the rest of it before we go super fast. Subway Series. I know you were around the Yankees and Mets. Mets taking 2 out of 3. Highlights from this one.
So yesterday I biked to Coney Island and there's a Subway in the subway in Coney Island, and I bought a couple waters there, like in the subway at the subway station.
That's
and
great.
I was like,
I love that.
I went to the Subway Series on Friday and Saturday, and then I did that on Sunday. So I feel like I went. You know what I mean?
It's good. It's good. I like that. What happened in the baseball game?
Okay. Oh, the baseball game. Sorry. The Mets inexplicably won the first game of the series, despite like having 0 relievers available. Jeff McNeil hits a two-run tater in the eighth to give them the lead off of Luke Weaver. They went 6-5. Dominguez, two bombs in that game. Judge homer in that game. Outrageous classic Soto homer in that game on an elevated fastball against Marcus Stroman. He just touches it, and it goes out backside. Home run for Soto against his former club. Place is going nuts. Game two, the Yankees just have a defensive disaster class like Game 5 World Series style. They score four in the first off of Carlos Rodon, including a all on a Brandon Nimmo grand slam. Then Anthony Volpe, who has just been a mess, he chucks a ball off Aaron Judge's face as they're running off the field by accident. It's like total rock bottom. Yesterday, I believe Volpe's dad got into a screaming match in the stands. Things are weird in Volpe world right now. He just looks uncomfortable. Do you remember when we were like in high school or in Little League and a ball was hit to a guy and you're just like, the second it gets hit there, you worry? Like every time there's a routine grounder to shortstop right now, I'm like, oh no! And same thing whenever he's up with runners on base. I will say on Sunday, the Yankees stopped their L6 to split the Subway Series. Like if they had lost this game, it would have been full burn it down mode. Max Fried against Mets bullpen game of Devenski, Zach Pop, Brandon Waddell, Huascar Brazoban, and Rico Garcia. The Yankees only winning by two. That should honestly count. Like in the NHL, it should be like an overtime loss.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of weird on Sunday because for as terrible as the Yankees defense has been, and in this game, they had some low moments too. It also totally saved their ass. Goldschmidt Bellinger scooped a double play ball, and then the Bellinger play was one of the best plays of the season. He catches a sinking line drive and then doubles off Lindor at first base with a perfect throw from left. That was, again, just like I said, unbelievable defensive play. So credit to him, and you know, Judge homers again. Wells, nice to see him do something positive. Sad that this was this difficult to win this game, but that's where the Yankees are at. They have the Mariners coming to town for three this week.
Do you think that the Yankees infield situation is not good enough? Well, so do they, because they just signed Jaime Candelario and Nicky Lopez to minor league deals. Let's fly over to turbo mode.
Faster than fast, quicker than quick. I am lightning.
I feel the need for speed.
It's turbo time.
The Chicago Cubs take 2 out of 3 over the St. Louis Cardinals. Game one was a homer fest. The Cubbies hit 8 home runs, the most in franchise history, in a single game. 3 from Michael Busch, 2 from PCA. PCA makes an unbelievable catch in the first inning of that game. Like, maybe his best catch of the year. Shows why he's so special out in center. Cardinals come back in game two with a Joel Pozo go-ahead blast in the 8th inning. He then does the full Junior Caminero winter ball celebration. Game three, the Cubs just go full beatdown mode, 11-0 over the Cardinals. They look like the best team in the NL Central, and this was a definitive statement for the Cubbies. Jameson Taillon is out for a month, if not more, with a calf strain. Jordan Wicks will come up and take his spot. But the Cubs, good stuff. Good job, Cubs. This was a little bit of a trap series here. Cardinals not playing well for the break. Rivalry, they handled their business.
Phillies take 2 out of 3 over the Cincinnati Reds. Jesús Luzardo and Andrew Abbott both struggle on Friday, but the Reds bullpen shows up. They win 9-6. Ranger Suarez continues to dominate. His ERA is down to 1.99. He was spectacular on Saturday. Schwarber hits his 27th homer. They win 5-1. And then on Sunday, one of the best pitching performances of the season, Zach Wheeler, 108-pitch complete game, his first complete game since 2021. 12 strikeouts, no walks, the only base runner allowed, an Austin Hayes home run. Now, the Philly fans were booing Austin Hayes over the weekend, a little bit leading up to his homer against Zach Wheeler, and then a lot afterwards. Guys, he had like an infection, some sort of kidney situation. He was not great for you. That was not the reason why the Phillies did not go to the World Series last year, was Austin Hayes struggling. We can let Austin Hayes be. It's going to be all right.
Not if he ruins the Zach Wheeler perfect game, they can't. Brewers take 2 out of 3 over the Marlins. They split the first two. Sandy Alcantara just okay in game one. Does feel like he's still going to get traded. Game two, Kyle Stowers hits his 16th home run of the year. Game three, the Brewers take this one. Brandon Woodruff back. He had been out for like, what, 2 years? He goes six innings, allows just one earned run, eight Ks, no walks. What a return for this guy. Super fun when he's on. Now, he does not look like the same pitcher. His fastball max and averages were way lower than they were before he had shoulder surgery. Great to see him back. Hopefully he can sustain that. Rhys Hoskins heads to the injured list with a thumb sprain, and up comes Andrew Vaughn. White Sox reclamation project.
We will see how that goes. Minnesota takes 2 out of 3 over the Tampa Bay Rays. We got a Harrison Bader walk-off homer on Friday. We got a Brooks Lee walk-off bunt on Saturday. And then the Rays outlast them on Sunday, despite Byron Buxton's 20th homer. Bader goes yard again. Twins bullpen not great after Joe Ryan, as the Rays win 7-5 in extras. Notable from this series is that Ha-Sung Kim is back. He had off-season shoulder surgery, of course, signed with Tampa Bay. It's kind of an interesting free agent fit. And he is now back with the Rays. Is he going to be taking shortstop reps over Taylor Walls? I kind of doubt it, but maybe. We will see. Obviously, he is making too much money for the Rays for him not to play, so he will be in the infield somewhere.
The Brooks Lee walk-off bunt on Saturday was a top 10 baseball highlight of the year. If you have not seen this, dear listener, go pull it up. It was like one of those slow ones right along the line where the fielder can't decide whether to touch it or to see if it goes foul. And it just stayed parallel to the line and just hit the base. It was great. Like a great baseball highlight. Make sure you make time for that. Speaking of things that people make time for, I made time to watch the White Sox beat the Rockies over the weekend. It's important to remember when you're feeling down, okay? If you're in the dumps and you're struggling, there are people worse off than you. Okay. There are bigger losers than you for sure. It's just math. Okay. There are a lot of people in this world. And that's how the White Sox must have felt over the weekend as they rolled into Colorado and they said, "We know what the worst team in baseball looks like. Trust us. We just did this. Now that's your job, Rockies." Rockies able to avoid the sweep on Sunday. They win that one. The White Sox win the other two. White Sox call up Colson Montgomery, who's very interesting. Complicated prospect. He looked like a top 10 type and then just wasn't hitting at all. They had to like send him down to the complex to totally reset his swing. We'll see how he adjusts to big league pitching.
Royals taken 2 out of 3 over the Arizona Diamondbacks. Chris Bubich, all-star, was very good on Friday. Vinny Pasquantino is heating up, folks. Pay attention. Royals win 9-3. Ryan Nelson has been quietly extremely dependable for the Arizona Diamondbacks as, I guess, the only D-backs pitcher that's like not making any money, but he has been really good. I guess Fott isn't really making much yet either, but Ryan Nelson's been fantastic. D-backs win on Saturday, 7-1, and then Michael Lorenzen, 7 scoreless on Sunday. Bobby Witt, Salvador Perez, homer. Royals win 4-0. Both of these teams are trying to avoid selling so badly, and I'm not sure either of them will succeed.
The Salvi Perez homer on Sunday was great. He was frustrated that he got plunked, I think, earlier in the game. And so, you know, he cranks one, camera follows the ball, and then it cuts back to Salvi, and he's just jawing at someone. And you can just hear it, right? Like, his Salvi, he's got like the Dikembe voice almost. Yeah. And you could just hear him, even though you can't hear him. It was great. I highly recommend going to watch that. Giants take 2 out of 3 over the A's. A's pounce on a winless Justin Verlander in game one, including a Denzel Clark 471-foot home run. Holy Lord, what in the world is going on? Denzel Clark is a freak of nature. If he figures out how to make more contact, like, it's just Canadian PCA. The Giants come back and win the second two games of the series, including a Logan Webb win on Saturday. Willie Adames is finally heating up at the plate. He had been really yucky for the first 2 months of the year after getting that big contract from San Francisco over the winter. He homered on Sunday and had three hits on Saturday. Just something to keep an eye on there. The did you see the Fitzgerald homer? The Tyler Fitzgerald homer on the
Jose Canseco
style doink.
Yeah, this was unfortunate because the A's are already allowing so many home runs. And to have one where Tyler Soderstrom, who's not exactly a natural out there in left, you know, gives it a little bit of an alley-oop over the fence for Tyler Fitzgerald.
I would describe it. I would describe it as like a volleyball set. Like
it was
going to land on the track.
Like I said, like the A's don't need help giving up homers, but here they are. Anyway, last series of the weekend, Padres 2-3 over the Rangers. Our guy, Randy Vasquez, with a quality start on Friday.
Legend. Machado
homers. Padres winning extras on a Jake Cronenworth walk-off single. Game two, Patrick Corbin, quality start. Josh Smith homers on the first pitch of the game. Kyle Higashioka revenge game. I'm sure he feels fine about his friends in San Diego.
I don't think it's revenge.
He really needs to
send on them.
But yeah, that's true. Three hits, five RBIs. Rangers win 7-4. And then on Sunday night, baseball doubleheader. That was weird. Padres bullpen game features 3 2/3 perfect innings from Kyle Hart. Oh, my goodness. Rangers offense remains sleepy. Brett Boone, where are you? Padres win.
Where are you? You should stop podcasting.
It's amazing that, like, I don't know what the splits have been. I guess the Rangers have played slightly better, but it's like that was like a huge story. Oh, Brett Boone just coming out of nowhere from his podcast booth to be the hitting coach, and then we just like the Rangers are just still not very good.
They're just like, the same.
They're pitching still amazing and their hitting stinks. All right, that's it. We did a podcast. This was a great pod. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Andrew Hartz, TJ Brassel, Colin Brennan, assisting on production. We appreciate all the work. Thank you all for listening. Quite the week ahead, folks. We are heading to Atlanta on Thursday. We will have a normal episode on Wednesday. We will be IRL together on Friday morning in the ATL. Looking forward to that. But until then, you can email us, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. And we'll talk to you all very soon. Bye-bye.